Hello, neighbors. Welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Impke, your host. This is episode 3 of season 2. If you've ever taken the TCH, Trans-Canada Highway for those from away, if you've ever taken it through Pasadena, you've likely seen the Dandy Farm where we're heading today. It's on the east side of the road, and in strawberry season, you'll see lots of folks in the fields bent over their baskets seeking those tasty jewels of the summer. If it is pumpkin season, you'll see the bright orange spheres that litter some of the fields, and the happy families out there getting some agritainment. This is Wright's Family Farm.
Carrots is what gives me something to do in the winter.
I can tell you the secret. And the secret is that Paul told me the secret. And the secret is there is no secret.
I know.
I think agriculture is, for all the romanticization of this pastoral life, it's certainly conducive to creating mental health challenges. I think it's only coming to light. Sometimes those large farms do a better job at stuff than some of us small guys do. And that's stewardship. I grow food for the world. What's your superpower?
Alas, I'm visiting in neither strawberry time nor pumpkin time. Rather, it's late January of 2020 before the pandemic. I head down a long, narrow lane to a place that's always ready for a chat, a vegetable farm in winter. I head into a building with lots of equipment and a bin of carrots waiting to be bagged, and my guest. By the way, he mentions a Paul occasionally, and that's Paul Lomond, his friend and mentor, and the person he bought the farm from a number of years back. Pull up a chair and join us.
My name is Andy Wright. I'm the owner of Wright's Family Farm. We're located in the beautiful Humber Valley, western Newfoundland. Beautiful, fertile valley. We're in a little small town named Pasadena. We farm pretty near 40 acres now. Of that, we own about 32, and we grow probably about 30 different products, mainly strawberries. Carrots are becoming more important to us, pumpkins, various berries, and then just some vegetables, but not the typical Newfoundland vegetables. We don't do potatoes, turnip, or cabbage.
No, the big three.
The big three. Well, we do a little bit of cabbage, but...
How did you end up in Pasadena growing everything but potatoes?
When I was 12, I started work for my uncle on a small dairy farm in Ontario, and I went to pick corn in a spot that he couldn't get in with the corn picker, and that's where it started. And I worked for him for 10 years probably, off and on. I went to University of Guelph, got a degree in agriculture, sold feed for a bit, got a master's degree, back to the feed industry, and then I had a call to ministry, which is a whole other gamut of things. But I went to a theological college in Toronto, Emmanuel College. Mm-hmm. I'm an ordained minister in the United Church of Canada. The process they had at the time, you were sort of sent to a place, and we put Newfoundland on our list, and by golly, here we are. And settled here in Pasadena at the little United Church here, and we've stayed 16 years. So I served there 7.5 years, and this is such a wonderful place, and the people are so wonderful, and we have a lot of good friends. They're our family, as much as we have family at home in Ontario, and this is home. We have two homes. We became really close, and then I had to start burying friends and caring for them when they, you know, got a bad report, as we say. And it got a little bit hard. Turns out I was struggling with mental health, depression, but I didn't know that. So I left full-time ministry and took a job with government. It wasn't a good place for me, just the overall environment. And so depression got worse, not knowing again that that's what it was. And then one day, coming home in a particularly bad way, I remember lying on the bed, probably crying, and my wife said, "Well, what do you want to do?" Like, and I said, "You know, all I've wanted to do ever is farm." About 2 weeks later, for sale sign came up on this place, and I just about died when I found out what the asking price was. But we figured it out, and we made it work. And here I am, a farmer, heading into our 7th season.
So it sounds like farming was an early passion.
Yeah, my father's side of the family was a farm family. Yep. I grew up in the Niagara region. Cherry orchards, peach orchards, all that stuff was around us. Yep. And now my younger brother got tangled up in the orchard side of it, and I got tangled up in the cow side of things. Here I am, dirt under my nails. Anybody asks me about farming, I say, well, if you're trying to pick what you're going to do, grow something you like. If you don't want to grow potatoes, don't do it. I grow strawberries, and I love growing strawberries and raspberries. They're challenging. The weather's a challenge. They're fiddly, and they're particular, and so they're fun. They take a lot of work. But if all I grew was carrots, no offense to the carrot growers, but I don't know that I'd be able to get out of bed every every day to grow a carrot. Yeah. And the number of carrots we grow is increasing. But you got to grow stuff you enjoy growing. So I love growing the strawberries. Yeah. I like growing the apples. I have a lot to learn still about apples. Yeah. A weird one I like growing is lettuce. Romaine lettuce? Head lettuce. We grew some this year and had some good success with it. They were beautiful heads and we sold them to a grocer. They were really well received and sold very fast. I like stuff that requires some attention, some care. Yeah. And perhaps that's how my other vocation that we talked about how I arrived here comes into it, right? That caring profession kind of thing. It's something that requires that little bit of effort. You know, and the strawberries are very labor intensive.
Yeah. So are pumpkins a trick here?
Yes, pumpkins are a trick. A nice thing with some of the progress we've made in selection and varieties is we're getting shorter day pumpkins. In the book, it'll say X number of days, 100 days. Well, it's way more than 100 days, but I try to stay away from anything more than 100 days. Yeah. So it kind of limits me. But there's some really nice varieties, even in that 80, 95 day variety. So that gives us time. But if we don't get any kind of heat, and if we get a cool September, the pumpkins don't make it. With most products, when they're ripe and they're ready and people buy them. Yeah. But pumpkin, after Thanksgiving and then Halloween, you got no use for your pumpkins. So they have to be ready. So that's why they're a bit dicey.
So if we had lots of secondary production capacity around, you just give them all of your pumpkins and they'd make pumpkin puree.
You could, yeah. You could.
It would still be tasty enough.
Yeah, like an eating pumpkin is different than a jack-o'-lantern pumpkin in that eating pumpkins tend to be smoother. But otherwise, you know, I think if you're making pumpkin puree, which has got a lot of squash in it.
What, pumpkin puree has a lot of squash in it?
Yeah, look on your pumpkin can.
Darn, you got to read those labels.
Read your pumpkin can label. Yeah, like a fair bit of squash.
Yeah, well,
it's not purely pumpkin.
Carrots are a bit of a special crop for you, isn't it?
Carrots is what gives me something to do in the winter. So, yeah, we started with just a very few carrots. And then Paul encouraged me to grow more. And we did. You know, so we started with a quarter of an acre, and now we're up over three. This year, I bought enough seed to do much more than that. Mm-hmm. It's a million carrot seeds. Yeah. Plus, I have a little bit left from last year. So we're going to have a fair number of carrots. They store well, and they sell locally really well. We have a bit of a carrot following, which is bizarre to me.
You call them carrot heads?
No. No, we call them our customers.
Do you hear people talk about them?
Like, yeah, so we will get stopped in the grocery store by people who don't know us, and we'll say, oh, are you the guy that grows those carrots? Well, they are the most wonderful carrots I've ever had. And at first it was really embarrassing, but it's nice to get that kind of feedback. The, you know, in wine, we talk about terroir. I started to call it the carrot terroir. Other people do grow the same variety of carrot we do, without the same flavor, it seems.
So if you had a secret, you wouldn't tell me anyways, because other farmers would hear it. But it's partly this little micro-environment we're in here.
I think it's the soil.
And the care of the soil. So it's the soil.
Okay. I think it's the soil. I can tell you the secret. And the secret is that Paul told me the secret. And the secret is there is no secret.
I know.
Yeah, it's hard to keep to myself. We grow our carrots just the same as everybody else does. Yeah. But I think it's the mix of soil we have here, and perhaps that little microclimate that we enjoy down through the valley.
Do you sell a lot of your material, like wholesale? You sell to the grocery stores, or mostly people?
Of our sales, about 80% is right from the little 12 by 20 market we have. And the other 20 is between two grocery stores. So we really appreciate those customers as well.
And they're quite happy to get whatever you can grow.
Yeah.
And the people who are in the stores know, okay, this comes from Wright's Family Farm.
Yes, the two stores that we sell to are very good. It will say Wright's Family Farm on it.
They should have a big cardboard picture of you.
They did.
Oh, they did. Oh, my goodness.
And
did people get their picture taken beside it?
No, we should do that, though. I never thought of that one. You know, we're slowly but surely trying to get our brand out.
Do you have a song that I can put underneath all of this somewhere?
Well, I am a huge Blue Rodeo fan. Anything Blue Rodeo.
It must be something in particular, though.
Well, there's a song.
The song he wrote about your strawberries?
No, I wish. I remember when they used to come to Guelph and play, when they first started. And what's amazing is they're still true to that. But it's a song I call it my Frost Song. And he says, on this cold September night, there's a line in the refrain.
Yeah.
And then he makes reference to Lake Ontario at the end, which is
right.
Where I grew up. I can't think of the title, but I can sing you the song, but I'm not going to.
Say that you're leaving. Well, that comes as no surprise. Still, I kind of like this feeling of being left behind. This ain't nothing new to me. I'd leave you feeling so stoned.
Hasn't Hit Me Yet by Blue Rodeo, played by request of today's guest, Andy Wright. In this next section, we talk about the nature of a U-Pick operation, and then I get him going, his words, on the value of large farms. Oh, and we learn the origin of the term stewardship. Bet you didn't know.
One of the things you deal with here as well is you have a lot of people coming as a U-Pick.
Yes.
And so you're dealing with the public. You're sort of like in agritourism, isn't that the term that they use?
When I think agritourism, I'm thinking buses and campers and stuff like that.
All
so,
right.
But agritainment.
Agritainment, okay.
I think we're a little bit more to agritainment, although we're still a grower, a producer.
Yes.
Pumpkin season is our agritainment season. It's a blast. Yeah. Now that we've got used to it, it's really a lot of fun. Pumpkin people are fun. They're here to have fun, and we try it, and we do our darndest to make sure they do.
Do you have a pumpkin cannon?
Not yet. There's
a lot of not yet.
Yes. Well, the main thing is, you know, when you invest in something like that, there's an investment and you got to recoup it.
Yep.
And one of our very fundamental beliefs is that we're not going to charge people to come on the farm. Mm-hmm. When we do have Pumpkin Fest, we do charge a very nominal fee for a tractor ride and our little barrel train ride and our little tiny corn maze. We just don't want to charge for people to come on the farm. And I know some of our farm friends do that. That's their decisions. And maybe someday we'll have to, but I don't anticipate it.
So the people who visit, what do they get in the car and drive home with that they didn't have when they came here?
Pumpkins.
You hope.
Yeah. So they go home with a memory. Some of my staff say that people talk about it as a tradition, and I love that. So a visit to the pumpkin patch, Wright's Family Farm, has become a tradition for them. You know, so they're building memories, and they come out and get an experience. We enjoy this agritainment part enjoy having people on the farm, and it's working for us. We're still early in the business cycle. Community is really important to us by nature of communities we grew up in, by virtue of being a minister in church. So we like to try and, you know, be good citizens as far as the business goes and as individuals.
Right.
You know, we'd like to be able to contribute to our communities, and we'd like to be able to do more of it. You know, we employ 8 people, so that's pretty
good.
We have really good staff. We're all reliable and good-natured, and we all get along really well. We have fun. When we work really hard, and we expect you to. But when we don't, we don't.
Do you get a sense of what people want out of their food, even food they're not buying here, but just in general, their relationship to food?
There's a lot of talk about local, but, you know, it's kind of because of our climate and our geography and the distribution of people across the province and the size of the marketplace, and it's a little bit tricky to do local food here, but they want it fresh. I think, you know, our best customers are the ones that want to have a relationship with their grower, and so we like that. We appreciate that too. So the people who stop us in the grocery store, say, are those your carrots? I don't know if they're so interested in how it's grown. I think perhaps they think they know how it's grown, but I don't think they know what goes into it.
Right.
I find that with strawberries in particular. I think everybody thinks it's easy to grow a strawberry, and it's not. Our challenge is the late frost. So our plants will start to bloom the first bit of June, and we still could get frost. You know, by that point, we're in full bloom. So that's a little stressor.
How do you protect the plants?
We use overhead irrigation.
Overhead irrigation.
So the freezing of the water lets off heat as it freezes on the plant. It's enough to actually keep the plant from freezing. And a combination of floating row cover. We have some big, heavy blankets.
Yeah,
and by big, I mean like a half acre, so 50 by 500. Weeds is a big challenge for us here.
How do you deal with it?
A combination of mechanical, chemical, and cultural methods. So, yeah, we do spray. We have to. And there's a particular product I use that's supposed to get reapplied in September. And for some reason, I don't do it. And I end up with a mess by the end of September of weeds. But we also do a lot of hand weeding. We'll probably do them by hand 3 times besides the spray applications. And then we cultivate regularly. That's just kind of part of training the plants.
Yeah.
And it's a nice Sunday afternoon job for me.
Yeah.
I enjoy that one.
We're really trying to grow agriculture here. And one of the issues is, how do you get new people into this?
Yeah.
Do you have any suggestions that you could give us for free?
Agriculture is a business, yeah, but it's also a really nice way to live. It's a good choice. It's hard work, boy. Mm-hmm. My uncles made it look so easy, but it's hard work. So you need to know that before you start.
This isn't going to help.
No. Be realistic about it.
Yeah.
The other thing is, you got to have the means. Our province has some really great support programs. Mm-hmm. We have awesome programs here. But you still have to be able to finance your portion. You have to be able to cash flow the whole thing. So one of the key things is having resources to get started. We were lucky. I mean, we've had, I don't know how many years we worked. We were in our mid-40s when we started. Late 40s, 46 I was. Same age as my mentor, same age as Paul when he started farming.
Oh, really?
Yes,
it was
oddly enough.
Excellent second career occupation.
Yeah, yeah. And he worked at the mill and I was a minister.
But
as far as learning, there's some good schools, you know, for formal education. There's mentorship programs around. It is a great career, but it's not easy to get into. And I remember looking, as a farm management specialist, looking at business plans of people trying to start from scratch. And it's really hard to imagine how they do it. So the main thing is, you got to have some resources besides, you know, grit and determination. You need those too.
When you talked about agriculture, you said it's not just a job.
It's a vocation.
Yeah.
It takes a certain skill set.
Sometimes I think that food is not just another commodity, that growing food is I can use the term spiritual thing, as opposed to other products. And you'd be well placed to fit in those.
Certainly my theological training and background influences a bit how I do things and how I think about things and how I think about the land and how I think about the water. And all through my theological education, it was in downtown Toronto, right behind Queen's Park, and I was the country kid. Well, there was two of us, actually. So I was always kind of interested in that, which is a huge part of the theology story, is land and landlessness. So that influences it. But there is, you know, I grow food for the world, what's your superpower kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
And now I certainly don't grow food for the world.
The world around here.
I think people are getting very distanced from their food. And even, I'm a huge proponent of food safety. We have our food safety certification. Mm-hmm. We're Canada Gap certified in a dozen products, and I believe in that 100%. The program has made me a way better grower. But in some ways, those programs, well-intentioned, but they seem to be taking the food away from where it's grown. You know, like, it's kind of like, well, a carrot can't touch the dirt.
Yeah.
A carrot grew in the dirt. Technically, once you pull that carrot and put it in the bin, if it bounces out of the bin onto the ground, you're not supposed to pick that carrot up and put it back in the bin.
Yeah.
So that doesn't even make sense. We want to take our food so far away from what it came from. Nobody wants to get grit in their teeth from the dirt in the field, and we certainly don't want anybody getting ill from foodborne, you know, the things that come from the ground. You know, our food is becoming so processed, so far removed from where it's come. You know, the population is so far away from where the food comes from.
Yeah, there seems to be a fear sometimes. If you have large factory farm, whatever that is.
What? Yeah.
But there's a concern about that.
Yes. Sometimes. But those large farms, a couple things about about farming in general. Now you've really got me.
Oh, dear.
There's large farms. And the other thing is corporate farms. We're a corporation. Corporate is a business structure with certain advantages and disadvantages. But these large, say, dairy farms, that's kind of where my background was. These large farms are, say, a family farm that brothers went their separate ways and then came back together and put all their cows in one place. And so they might have 4,000 cows. But they're not going to make any money if they don't look after those cows. Those cows are well looked after, and they are clean places. Mm-hmm. Cows are better looked after than we look after ourselves sometimes. And same with pigs. So we have to look after, whether it's our animals or our plants or the land that we grow our plants on, we have to do that. Sometimes the large farms are, in my opinion, in a better position to do a better job at these things than, say, a small farm like us, because they have the capital, they have the resources to adopt, the modern technologies that are conducive to enhancements in food safety, labeling, even washing, land stewardship. They can invest in no-till or reduced till because they can afford the equipment. And I think those large farms are sustainable. And you mentioned viability in long term. I think there's an issue of economic sustainability. And our farm, because of where we're located, I think is sustainable.
Because not just the soil, but the population around here and the tradition.
And the density of farms. We grow stuff that nobody else does, and we do that on purpose. Partly because we don't see the need to be competing against our neighbors, and we hope that they see the same need. But we don't want to be in competition with our neighbors. And there's plenty, enough things that we can grow to go around. So sometimes those large farms, and people are going to shake their heads when they hear say that, are in a better position and do take advantage of being in a better position. And by take advantage, I mean do a better job at stuff than some of us small guys do. And that's stewardship. And that's a theological term. Actually, it's the caregiver of the pigs, the sty ward.
Okay. Right? Oh, is that a sty ward?
The ward, the person who looks after the pig. Right? Yeah. So we're stewards. And granted, some of us take it more seriously than others. And I do what I can within my means, because I try to be conscious of certainly the soil. And there's a brook that runs through, right behind us here. And that's a part of my water source. So I'm conscious of the water source. I hope people upstream are as well. But I also think a bit about the air, dust, and that sort of thing. So I want to make sure I look after all that things. And we've taken some steps to try and be better stewards of the soil. We do use cover crop in the winter as a part of our rotation.
Want your soil to become part of the air.
Part of the brook. But also, we're adding crop we use. It's rye. It has a lot of biomass to put back in. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to build up the organic matter a bit in that upper layer.
Hey, I guess it is.
Best of our guest today, that was Blue Rodeo. We begin this last section of our chat by referring to farming and mental health challenges.
Is there something about farming that makes for more mental health challenges for people or less, or is there something unique about the occupation?
I don't know, but I know that there's a Farm Credit Corporation is partnered with a group in Saskatchewan, Do More Agriculture. Yes. It's all about mental health. And Paul Brandt voices a commercial for them, and they do a really good job. It can be lonely if you like crowds. I don't mind being alone. But there's a lot of stresses, whether financial, if you're in commodity, or supply management these days as well. For 30 years it's been iffy, but it seems to be eroding a little bit. So there's a lot of stressors with it, and there can be long hours certain times of the year. There's nights where I have to come out at 2 in the morning, and I'll sit in my truck until 7 or 7:30. So it gets tiring, and there's this thing about, you know, the strong, independent farmer, mm-hmm. entrepreneurs, which mm-hmm. we are. But I think, you know, if we get caught up in that and we don't seek out help, we think it's just a bad day. So I think that's where it becomes a problem, is the perception, even our self-perception of what we are and who we are, and elements of isolation, elements of stress. I think that, mm-hmm. and there's certainly a genetic component to it too. But, you know, I would just say to farmers, because I struggled with the diagnosis myself, I wasn't very happy when I was told and that I should probably consider medication. But my doctor and the counselor who put me in this direction said, Andy, you know, if you're diabetic, you take insulin,
yeah.
or metformin or whatever you take. If you have high blood pressure, it's the same thing. So, you know, it's not a weakness. I think it takes a lot of strength to get through it.
Yeah.
And even when it's diagnosed and it's treated, it still, you know, depends on how severe it is.
Yeah.
But I think agriculture is, for all the romanticization of this pastoral life, it's certainly conducive to creating mental health challenges. And I think it's only coming to light, mm-hmm. and I think it's really important. But, you know, I can't imagine one of my neighbor farmer friends coming and saying to me, boy, Andy, I'm not feeling right. You know, I can't imagine
that. Okay.
I wish they would.
So the awareness is there. We're sort of moving down that path, but it's still a ways to go in terms of people actually reaching out.
In any profession, I think, you know,
true.
Mental health is such a, you know, and I'm open about it.
Yeah.
I guess because I'm able to be. It's just the kind of person I am. It doesn't make me any less a person.
Yeah.
It doesn't make me weak or erratic or unpredictable or anything like that.
It makes you also very important for other people to hear that voice.
Yeah. I think that's important. I guess that's why I talk about it.
Yeah.
Because I want people to hear me and know that there is someone out there who's not afraid to say.
Yeah. Just making their way through this.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I'm doing fine. Like, I did a thing with the CBC and got some feedback and trollish feedback, but there was a lot of, you know, we're there for you. Well, I'm way past that.
Yeah,
because it's not that.
Yeah.
It's just, hey, this is my story, and I'm fine. You know, I'm aware, and so I know what I need to do.
Yeah.
And
is it possible, too, like, being a farmer, your identity is tied up in farming and so on, and there are, in certain segments of society, a lot of criticism of farming.
Yeah.
Does that make it harder? Because the thing that makes you tick, that gets you up in the morning, is something that doesn't seem to be valued by many people. You're trying your darndest.
Yeah. I'm only starting to become aware of that, personally. This feeling that as people get further and further away from their food, and they're not understanding how it's produced and what's normal and what's not and why we do what we do. And there's a lot of bad information out there, a lot of misinformation. That's why it's important to do things like we're doing today. It doesn't bother me yet. And it may bother others, and others might say, well, to heck with them. But it's kind of coming into my consciousness a little bit, and it's troubling. I mean, jeepers, I have a bachelor's and a master's degree in agriculture. But what happens is you get this feedback like, well, it's because you're brainwashed in it. Well, no. I studied the science. Oh, well, science is all paid by the big corporations. Well, no, it's not necessarily. Some of it is, granted, but no, it's not.
The internet doesn't help with all of that.
No, because anybody with a keyboard's an expert. That's a bit challenging, but I don't mind talking about it, but, you know, the person I'm talking to needs to have an open mind and needs to hear what I have to say.
Yeah. What's some of your favorite local foods? Don't have to be from your farm. But
well, I love my raspberries. Milk.
I've never milk. Been a raspberry. Milk.
Okay, dairy farmers of Newfoundland, milk. I really like our raspberries and our strawberries.
Yeah.
I get tired of carrots, but again, a local carrot is
there's a place
nice.
For a carrot.
Yeah.
Here there.
Yeah. Gee, that's a good question, but certainly the milk. I did have some amazing lamb once. That was as much the chef as the lamb. Wow, I love that question.
Yeah.
Wish I could give you a better answer.
Well, that was a great answer.
It's all good.
Thanks so much, Andy, for taking this time. It was great chatting with you.
Oh, you're welcome. It was a pleasure.
And,
I enjoy getting a chance to talk about our industry.
It needs to be done and needs to have more voices out there.
Yes, it does. We need to learn how to stand up for ourselves a bit better.
Yeah.
I think,
All the best.
Yeah, thanks.
About a week after we did this interview at the 2020 Newfoundland Labrador Federation of Agriculture AGM, there was a panel session on the topic of mental health and farming. Several farmers were on the panel. Despite it being in late afternoon, when attention generally declines, when Andy told his story, you could hear a pin drop in that large room. While such discussion may be difficult, it should be encouraged and nurtured by all of us, you and I. Community. As Andy said, community is the concept that helps to motivate the Wrights family farm every season. That's what gets built with every pumpkin, every flat of strawberries, every aching back.
know, our best customers are the ones that want to have a relationship with their grower. We appreciate that too. There's this thing about, you know, the strong, independent farmer, entrepreneurs, which we are. Pumpkin season is our agritainment season. It's a blast.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes of this show or for more information, go to fittoeatnl.ca. The song for today's show was Hasn't Hit Me Yet by Blue Rodeo. The theme music, Cluck Old Hen, was performed this week by Adam Steffi. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. I'll be right here. Happy trails.
Agriculture is a business, but it's also a really nice way to live. It's a good choice.